Hello everyone, welcome to another webinar case study recording. I hope you've been listening to them and enjoying them, but if you haven't, if this is your first one, here's the spiel. In 2018, once a month, I cover my favorite neurotransmitter case. These are based on real patients with real results. Sometimes our neurotransmitter results will be interpreted with other tests, included right there, sex steroids, stress hormones, elements. I hope you've been enjoying them and finding them helpful. So today, we're going to talk about Natalie. Natalie is in her 30s. She's anxious, sleep disturbed. She's on oral contraceptives. And I will talk about her neurotransmitters, urinary metabolites, and diurnal stress hormones. Before we get into Natalie's case, I'd like to talk about the pill, which is a very common prescription drug that women of reproductive age take. The pill is very effective at preventing pregnancy. In fact, in pharmacology, that's one of the most monumental achievements of the 20th century. Provides many other benefits. Women that have PCOS, for example, can feel a lot of relief from their high androgen symptoms, and they go on. Some women, however, can be vulnerable to developing mood disorders, and they can develop anxiety, depression, sleep disturbances, like our case Natalie here. And that's because the pill, actually, in addition to replacing our body's natural hormones, estrogen, progesterone, testosterone, it adds in the synthetic hormones, brings down the endogenous hormone expression to a low level. And as kind of a side reaction, it can deplete the body of some key minerals and vitamins, B vitamins, vitamin C, magnesium, zinc, CoQ10, folate. Those are all very important cofactors in carrying the reactions for neurotransmitter formation and many other signaling molecules in our body. So nutritional consultations are very important when a woman is going on oral contraceptives. And even then, sometimes women can't tolerate it. I certainly don't want this talk to be in any way a way to villainize the pill. That's not the case. What I'm just trying to say is that for some women, it is very effective in trying to control their symptoms or prevent pregnancy, and yet a certain percentage of women can't tolerate it, just like with any other medication. So we're going to talk about Natalie. She is 33, premenopausal irregular. She has some mild symptoms and some moderate symptoms, and she's on birth control pills. This is Natalie's, a portion of her requisition form. You can see that she's reporting some mild symptoms, and most of her symptoms fall in this green category. And then there's a couple of categories that are lighting up yellow. So throughout this presentation, I'll be talking about the green light, yellow light, red light. So basically, if somebody's doing well, they'll be in the green zone, right? And if they're starting to develop some symptoms, they'll be in that yellow zone. And if their symptoms are severe enough to cause a lot of changes in their life, a contributing factor to how their quality of life is going, then the symptoms, I'll call them red category. Okay, so specific symptoms that Natalie reported in January of 2018, when she first tested her neurotransmitters with us, there's a large number of mild symptoms, including some high androgen symptoms like acne. She's reporting some fatigue, mood swings, irritability, aches and pains. Her moderate symptoms are anxiety and stress, and severe is sleep disturbed. She can't sleep well, and if you can't sleep well, you're not going to be feeling well altogether. And we ran her neurotransmitters. You can see right here, and if you're familiar with our report interpretation, this is the result that we obtained for the patient, and then the letters to the right indicate if the result falls outside of our range. So we have our normal range, which is based on 5th and 95th percentiles, and then we have our optimal range. So if a patient falls outside the normal range, the letters here will indicate L for low or H for high, And if they fall outside the optimal range, they won't necessarily show up right here, but that's kind of indicative where patients begin to develop symptoms. That's what I call that yellow zone. So I like to look at the report in a more graphical format. That's why I always pull up the neurotransmitter cascade and mark it up. So you can see that her serotonin and 5-HIA are running low, and then everything else kind of looks normal. So let's talk about serotonin and 5-HIA. What do low levels of serotonin look like in terms of symptoms? Well, low serotonin is typically presenting in patients that report suffering from anxiety, headaches, irritability, low mood, sleep disturbances, worry, kind of that mood phenotype that Natalie indicated on her requisition form. Additionally, if you look at her melatonin results, because we did use the four strips that she submitted for her neurotransmitter test, we broke it out into four individual samples and analyzed it for 6-sulfatoxymelatonin. This 6-sulfatoxymelatonin that we measure in urine is coming directly from melatonin production in the pineal gland in the brain. So the melatonin that's produced in the pineal gland is released into peripheral circulation. That is one of the areas in the brain that's not protected by the blood-brain barrier. And then the melatonin goes through metabolism through the liver, and then it gets excreted in the urine. Some studies show that urinary sulfatoxymelatonin is actually a biomarker of brain serotonin production. So this serotonin right here that we're measuring, this is showing us how the overall body serotonin tone is doing, and it's low. And this marker is showing us what the brain serotonin is doing. So from this low result, we know that her brain serotonin is low, her overall body serotonin is low, and that when the results are this low, a patient is not going to be sleeping very well. Next, we're looking at the catecholamines and PEA, and we see that she has low PEA, and this is something we typically see in patients that talk about having that foggy brain and ability to concentrate. They just have such a hard time getting focused on the tasks that are in front of them just because their brain keeps wandering off and they can't seem to bring it back and rein it in. And at the same time, with that foggy brain, she has high epinephrine. So that's our adrenaline being pumped out of the adrenal medulla. And high epinephrine has been reported in a number of studies, and a lot of these studies show that epinephrine excretion is high in patients with PTSD, anxiety, depression, nervousness. So she has that tired brain wired feeling. So she's fogging, she can't concentrate, but at the same time, she's anxious and wired from the epinephrine. Next up, I wanted to take a look at her diurnal hormone distribution. So there are a couple adjectives that I'll be using throughout this talk. Circadian and diurnal. So circadian is something that has a rhythm that is tied to our circadian clock. So the suprachiasmatic nuclei in our brain, that's a region of the brain that's responsible for telling our body, oh, it's time to go to sleep, or it's time to wake up. The suprachiasmatic nucleus sits above our optic nerve so that it can be receiving direct inputs from our eyes. That's why when we wake up early in the morning and it's light outside, we're more likely to be more fully awake faster. And when it's winter and it's dreadfully dark and you still wake up at the same time and your eyes are not registering light, you have a really hard time waking up and getting out of bed. So the circadian control is something that is telling our cortisol to be low in the morning, start off low, rise towards its peak in about an hour after rising, and then rise towards the evening and stay low for nighttime. That's the ideal pattern. Well, we're looking at cortisol here that Natalie was producing, and this would be a function of the adrenal cortex, if you will. This is a picture on the left right here. You can see that Natalie's starting off high. Look how high this first morning cortisol is. And the first urinary free cortisol measurement is telling you what's happening with the body at night. This means her cortisol levels are high at night. Her stress hormone is very high at night. So how can she be possibly sleeping? And then, she's starting out high, and then she's coming down, and then she's going up again, and she's coming down. So basically, she has a zigzag pattern that is not at all reflective of what a normal circadian cortisol pattern should be. And she comes back down, even though she should be coming up, and then she comes up in the evening and at bedtime. And these are the measurements of cortisol. These are the levels that are going to prevent her from sleeping well. The next adjective I will be using is diurnal. Diurnal means that it's not necessarily under circadian control. It just means that it has a rhythm throughout the day. So you can expect it to rise towards the day and then fall towards the night. So that's epinephrine and norepinephrine. The adrenal medulla produces catecholamines. So it makes large amounts of epinephrine, that's our adrenaline, and small amounts of norepinephrine, because whatever norepinephrine there is will most likely be metabolized very quickly to epinephrine by phenylmethyltransferase. Norepinephrine and epinephrine levels also fluctuate throughout the day. So when you get out of bed in the morning and go to the bathroom to brush your teeth, norepinephrine levels will rise. And they do that to control proper blood pressure so we don't pass out upon rising. And they do that to mobilize our glucose and maintain our overall physical body tone, all of the physiological functions that we need to be able to get out of bed and go to the bathroom and brush our teeth. And norepinephrine and epinephrine both are supposed to start out low, rise throughout the day, and then come back down. Well, you can see that Natalie's starting out pretty good in her norepinephrine. This would be our mostly sympathetic nervous system measure. And then she's coming down in the towards the evening. This is what fatigue looks like. So this is what insomnia looks like, high cortisol at night and in the morning. And somebody who's showing really low levels of either glucocorticoids or catecholamines in the middle of the day, these are the patients that will be presenting with quite a bit of fatigue. You can see that both norepinephrine and epinephrine tank. Interestingly, you can also expect for these cortisol and norepinephrine levels to be flip-flopped, so to be opposite. So if somebody has HPA axis dysfunction and their cortisol is abnormally high, you can expect their norepinephrine and epinephrine levels to be the opposite. It can be really low, abnormally low. So look out for that pattern. So this is kind of a picture of a patient who can't sleep at the same time is really tired. This is a slide showing what Natalie's provider did for trying to improve her sleep and address some of the other symptoms that could be arising from being on birth control for a long time. So as I showed in one of the first slides of this presentation, the pill can deplete several key nutrients, folate, B vitamins. So this is what her doctor is introducing right off the bat. So folate, a nice B complex, betaine, which is trimethylglycine, and niacin. Also, to support her for the transition from the pill, her doctor prescribed oral progesterone at 50 milligrams, indole-3-carbinol, diazolmethane for overall reproductive system support and proper metabolism of her hormones. And for mood support, she introduced L-theanine and 5-HTP. 5-HTP is great for those patients that have low serotonin. And if they're not quite responding as well as you would like them to, you can always introduce 5-HTP with some green tea catechins. What they do is inhibit aromatic amino acid decarboxylase in the gut. So more of the intact 5-HTP can reach the brain and then increase serotonin right there in the brain. And L-theanine is just an overall really great modulator. It increases our alpha waves. So our brain has four types of waves, rudimentary speaking. The beta waves are our task-oriented, I'm going to do this kind of waves. Our alpha waves are quiet, attention, meditative type waves. So when you're meditating or doing yoga, those are alpha waves that your brain has. So L-theanine is really good at inducing alpha waves. It works through glutamate receptors, both the metabotropic and the ionotropic receptors, and it stimulates glycine, GABA, dopamine, and serotonin. It potentiates their signaling. So, 2 months later, we have a whole new set of symptoms and therapies. Still 33, she's still irregular, and she has not had a period yet. Her self-reported symptom profile improved. Many symptoms got better. You can see this by disappearance of that yellow zone. Now she's all in the green zone, so she has just a few symptoms. And this big one that was severe the first time around, her sleep improved quite a bit. So if we break these down, this is what her symptoms look like in January. Now a lot of them are going away, and some of the symptoms are getting a lot less severe. That's great. Let's look at her neurotransmitters. This is what they look like now. Again, I really like to look at them in a more visual format. When we introduce 5-HTP, you can expect 5-HTP to normalize serotonin and melatonin levels. And that's what we see here. Her serotonin and 5-HAA are now in a normal range. Her melatonin normalized. You can see how well she's doing now by feeding that pathway. This melatonin is a little bit high at night, and that's okay. Not to be worried. This is totally normal. So very effective treatment for Natalie was introducing 5-HTP. Next, we see that her GABA decreased and her histamine increased. So a couple of words about that. Increased histamine, we see somebody with allergies, and that's kind of the predominant symptom that's been studied and reported in literature, is if histamine is elevated, look for some sort of gut sensitivity or allergic response. And she did introduce a lot of different supplements that she was not on before. So something to look into would be, do any of her supplements contain an offensive ingredient to her system? Is it, whether it's soy or dairy or gluten, just kind of keeping an eye on what the ingredients are in the supplements would probably be a good idea. Additional symptoms of high histamine are depression, OCD, sleep problems, sensitivity to chemicals. That kind of goes along with the allergy symptom. She didn't seem to have a lot of the depression symptoms, but maybe something in her gut is driving the higher histamine and still contributing to that rudimentary insomnia phenotype. Decreased GABA is totally associated with anxiety and depression. However, in this case, I wouldn't be too concerned. GABA and progesterone systems are intimately linked. And although it is unusual to see lower GABA levels in somebody who's supplementing with progesterone, it could just be her body adjusting to her new equilibrium of not being on birth control pills and then introducing all those modulators that I showed a couple of slides ago. So just keeping an eye on that low GABA and seeing if she's having some of the symptoms or not, and it didn't seem like she was, and monitoring that, seeing if the symptoms can become bothersome. And with her catecholamines and PEA, we're seeing great improvement with PEA levels, and this is where B6 fits in. This is why we need vitamin B6, so that it can form a lot of our different neurotransmitters, including PEA, to help with our attention. Her epinephrine decreased, kind of taking the edge off some of that anxiety. And now we're seeing low normal dopamine, low normal norepinephrine, and higher metabolites. And if you see where she's getting kind of hinged, is this COMT? So lower dopamine, higher HVA, here's COMT. Norepinephrine lower, high in norepinephrine, here's COMT. So we want to be very cognizant of that. So she might not be somebody who would do well with SAMe, for example. This might be the patient you would give SAMe and she would tank even lower on dopamine and norepinephrine. So keeping an eye on that. As far as specific symptoms go, lower dopamine is associated with fatigue, irritability, aches and pains, and again, sleep disturbances. I know that dopamine is excitatory, but it is really important for maintaining appropriate blood pressure and feeding back to the sympathetic nervous system and allowing for the sympathetic nervous system to be communicating back to the central nervous system and regulating our sleep. And then lower norepinephrine, similar symptoms, decreased mental sharpness, increased forgetfulness, and depression. Again, this is a transition period for Natalie. She just went off the pill 2 months ago. She's been on the new supplements for 2 months. So keeping an eye on her symptoms and results is a really good idea. This is a really important point. This is a paper that talks about how introducing treatment into the dopamine system can hijack serotonin system. And the gist of this paper is that if you're introducing excitatory support, for example, if you're giving your patient tyrosine or levodopa to support dopamine, you have to give them 5-HTP because that levodopa will hijack all of the serotonin systems and will take over and start manufacturing its own dopamine and completely obliterate the serotonin system. They always have to be balanced. Same thing, if you're giving somebody inhibitory support in the form of 5-HTP, how Natalie's provider was doing, you ought to introduce tyrosine. Because with a lot of inhibitory support, the patient's gonna feel great for the first week. They're gonna feel relaxed and calm, and they're gonna start sleeping better. And then in another week or so, they can turn into couch potatoes. They can just be so relaxed that they won't have enough energy. It will flip and have the undesirable side effect of fatigue. So keep an eye on that. Next, we have her diurnal results, and they look remarkably better. You can see that although she is starting out high with cortisol, still residual sleep disturbances that can be seen right here, high cortisol production at night. She is assuming more of the normal circadian shape for her cortisol. This might be something to address with something like phosphatidylserine right before bedtime to lower cortisol night production. Now her norepinephrine and epinephrine are low. So I bet she actually has a lot of morning fatigue. Hopefully this will get resolved with a new set of interventions that her provider prescribed, but we'll get to that in a moment. Her doc also ran some metabolites through us and we looked for urinary estrogens, progestogens, and androgens. Estradiol is low, as you would expect for somebody who's just coming off the pill and not menstruating yet. Her urinary progesterones are high. What could that possibly mean? Well, if you remember, Natalie did start taking 15 milligrams of oral progesterone. So you can test dried urine with oral progesterone, but expect higher urinary pregnenolone results with oral progesterone therapy. Pregnenolone is a surrogate marker for circulating blood progesterone. So if you're giving somebody an exogenous pharmacological dose of progesterone, it will be metabolized and excreted in urine, and those results will be higher. This is what that means. So not to be alarmed, this is all consistent with her therapy. To get a better idea of how she's metabolizing that oral progesterone and whether or not she's making any bioavailable progesterone out of her oral progesterone, you'd be better off testing blood spot or saliva. Those are the ones that will tell you how much progesterone are her tissues getting. Switching to saliva or blood spot might be the ideal choice for this patient. Well, the new treatment plan included all of the first phase interventions right here, but then her doc also introduced some antioxidant therapy, vitamin E, a little bit more vitamin B6 as its own standalone supplement, not part of a complex, magnesium, calcium, and EPA DHA, again, that antioxidant, very good lipid, feeding her brain supplement. She also included ovulation and reproductive system support. Those are all really great herbs for supporting her through this transition off the pill. And if you notice, off oral progesterone, so now normal hormones, just ovulation and reproductive support, licorice root and phosphatidylserine for that high cortisol, L-theanine, she's staying with that, 5-HTP, she's staying with that, and a little bit more mood support. St. John's wort, that's our nature's antidepressant. It actually works to inhibit some of our serotonin transporters in a way that selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors work, or SSRIs, that's a common class of antidepressants. Passion flower is a nervine. It's an MAO inhibitor. There are so many different monoamine oxidase inhibitors that are nature created. If you're interested in them, there's a ton of information on the internet. So that's an option for patients who have that speedier MAO burning through their neurotransmitters and metabolizing them. Then her provider also introduced glycine and taurine, two more inhibitory calming neurotransmitters, amino acids also. All right, so here's her new list. 2 months later, yet. So now this is the third time that Natalie will be testing. And this is in May. If you remember, she started off in January. She tested again in March. And now this is her May result. She's still 33 and still irregular. And now she is menstruating. She still has few mild symptoms. And I listed her therapies on this slide right here. Look at her results side by side. This is the best that Natalie has felt yet in those 3 months. Isn't that remarkable? So now, this is what her symptoms were in March, which was a great improvement from January. And this is what she feels like in May. Still has really mild sleep disturbances and irritability, but her symptoms have improved dramatically. This is really exciting. This is one of my favorite slides. Show just how much better the patient felt with her doctor introducing all of those really helpful interventions. Okay, neurotransmitter results. All right, so side by side, you can see that her serotonin and metabolites are still doing great. She is a really good responder to 5-HTP. We love seeing this. You can see that in May, her melatonin is still looking great. Again, a little bit higher melatonin right here is okay. Not to worry about this. Her GABA levels are now normal. Her histamine improved. So overall, she's doing fantastic. Now her dopamine is running a little bit higher and her DOPAC and HAA are also high. This is completely normal. And you can see that with the improvement in dopamine levels, she actually felt better. Although her provider did not introduce tyrosine, a lot of that adrenal support can drive dopamine levels to normalize and offset that rigorous inhibitory support her provider introduced. Although our clinicians at ZRT would probably go forward with introducing a little bit of tyrosine support had they seen these results right here. But Natalie seems to be doing remarkably well, so kudos to her provider to figuring out this puzzle. And look at that beautiful cortisol curve. She started off in a zigzag format, and now it starts off low, increases in the second morning, and comes down so nicely in the evening. And so are her norepinephrine and epinephrine. The levels do look great with the set of interventions that her provider introduced. Her urinary metabolites levels also show a difference, and the difference is mostly reflected in the fact that she was taking oral progesterone earlier on in March, and you could see that her levels were high, and the levels came back down to her normal endogenous levels in May. She did test on day 23, which we typically recommend that women test their hormones if they have regular cycles on days 19 to 21. She tested on day 23. It's possible that her progesterone could be decreasing due to being testing in a slightly later window than what we recommend, or it's possible that her ovarian function hasn't quite normalized yet because it's only been 4 months since she first went off birth control. Now, let's do a summary. In January of 2018, Natalie was on oral contraceptives, and she had a lot of highs and a lot of lows. really high cortisol, up and down norepinephrine and epinephrine, really low melatonin. So those are definitely markers of somebody who is not sleeping well. This associated really well with her symptoms. Low serotonin PEA, high epi. Again, this will be feeding into her poor sleep. This will be feeding into some inattentiveness. And this would be that wired, irritated feeling. March, she was off oral contraceptives. She was on some oral progesterone, along with some mood support and some reproductive hormone support. Her hormones, cortisol, improved, but still high in the morning, so meaning high overnight production, preventing her from having a really wholesome good night's rest. Norepinephrine and epinephrine were lower in that afternoon, so that contributing to fatigue. Melatonin normalized with 5-HTP intervention, as you would expect for somebody. Supporting serotonin system would help support the melatonin production and help sleep. Low estradiol, high pregnenolone, probably due to oral progesterone, and her neurotransmitters, some normalized and some were a little bit off from the optimal levels that we would like to see, and that was likely due to her body just figuring out its new equilibrium, new normal. And finally, in May, she was on a lot of different supplements, mostly surrounding feeding back those nutrients and minerals and vitamins that she's been missing while she was on oral contraceptives, feeding her neurotransmitters, that inhibitory neurotransmitter systems to keep her sleeping better, and then a lot of reproductive support of optimizing her ovulation and feeding her body with herbs that help us get back in sync with our cycles. And this was the best symptom profile she has had yet since January. So we like seeing that. So what to do next? Her histamine did stay a little bit high at the end, so introducing a low histamine diet, that should be fairly easy. There are foods that can run high in histamine, things like champagne and cured meats and some smoked cheeses, so trying to avoid that for a while, and then figuring out if any of her supplements contain ingredients that could be irritating to her immune GI system. Foundational support, continuing with everything that her doc recommended, but methylated B complex, see how she does with some methylated Bs that would be readily available for all of the reactions that her body needs to make neurotransmitters. Selenium, zinc, magnesium, vitamin C, those would be all essential nutrients that the pill tends to deplete. So continuing with magnesium and then introducing some zinc and selenium and vitamin C, she would probably need long-term serotonin support. Seeing how she does without it might be an option, but she responded so well, and her levels were quite low right when she started. So that might be a really good option for this patient, is just to continue with 5-HTP therapy. She might need some melatonin, depending on her sleep continues to do, and really monitoring that would be a great idea, but kind of keeping right on top of it, and melatonin would definitely be a go-to intervention if her sleep suffers again, just because we saw how low she was in the beginning. Diamine oxidase supplement, that would be something that would address that histamine being a little bit high, but seeing how she does a low histamine diet first. And then ovulation support, Vitex, maca, seed cycling, considering all of those and seeing how she does around her cycle. So that concludes my case for Natalie. Thanks for listening, and next month, I am so excited to say that we'll have a guest speaker, Dr. Allison McAllister, will be talking about Zoe. Till next time, thanks for listening.